Welcome to Compliance Pointers, where we take an in-depth look into the latest news, trends, and challenges surrounding information security, privacy, and marketing compliance. Let's dive in with your host, Jordan Eisner.
Welcome to another episode of Compliance Pointers. I'm Jordan Eisner, VP of Growth at Compliance Point, and today I'm joined in person.
In person. That's a big deal.
By David Foreman. It is a big deal, and we're hoping it's a big deal to them watching and listening to this. But
I'm watching the live feed right now. Viewership is like just going through the
roof.
That's
right. Look at the likes.
Oh, wow. New record. Keep going.
For those of you that have watched or listened to podcasts in the past, you know who David Foreman is. And those of you who haven't, you might know who David Foreman is, right? You're making yourself known out there. David, CEO of Mastermind Certification Body, accredited to assess and certify governance programs against standards by the International Organization for Standardization, ISO. They're the first company in the U.S. to focus exclusively on ISO certifications, and that is one of the most trusted forms of third-party assurance used by technology service providers.
You should sell ISO certs. You're pretty good at that.
In a way, I do. That includes 27001, ISO 9001. Well, not Mastermind, but your experience.
Correct.
With 9001. But with Mastermind, 27001, 27701, 42001.
Of course.
Anything I left out?
Those are the management system standards. So we do extensions as well. So 27017, 27018, and then CSA Star Level 2 certification as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you've been in business for a little over a year now.
Yeah, we're 15, 16 months now.
Yep. 15, 16 months. Mm-hmm. And David, you just got back from, what, 2-3 weeks? You were in Japan. You were in London for a little while. You were in Morocco.
Yeah, how much more do you follow me? There's one more country.
Constantly.
You know,
I've got you both.
Yeah, Germany as well.
Germany.
There you go. Appreciate it. I do enjoy travel, but I also enjoy being at home, and I'm happy I'm back home in Atlanta right now.
Says many people after that long of travel.
It is grueling, especially the time zone differences. I think that's the hardest part.
Well, that's because being a founder, right, of an emerging provider, although, you know, you could argue that you're the leading 42001.
I would say we're enterprise at this point.
Enterprise.
Yeah.
But the life you lived, I was just talking to you about it. So you were still working. 5 a.m., 10 a.m., wherever you were, local time, you were working. Afternoons, you were sightseeing and eating the good food. And you said you don't sleep.
Yeah, I struggle with lack of sleep, to be honest. But more importantly, I think the Asia part of the travel, that was more difficult because just like more opposite time zones from the U.S. market. But yeah, there's a lot of 5 to like 10 a.m. type co-working spaces in Tokyo, Osaka. But still, we had a really good time over there and ate amazing food. If you're a fan of sushi, I'm a fan of you.
So we've done podcasts in this room before. This is the Compliance Point offices, but this is the first one we're doing on camera inside this room. So hopefully
I requested it, to be honest, and I think we should request Jordan to do this more often. This is nicer than his home office.
That's right. So reason to keep doing it. And we've invited David in for two podcasts today. Mm-hmm. The one we're going to be speaking about is what we've titled ISO as a Catalyst, Not a Checkbox. Mm. And so that's what we're going to get into in this first episode. So it's really about ISO being viewed as a launching point for improving security, ops, trust, and not just a compliance checkbox. So many times when, you know, at least in my experience, somebody's pursuing ISO, it's because they have to. Somebody's requiring them to do so, and that's probably going to continue to be the case for a long time. But
it's typically someone at sales like you.
Right.
They're pushing the company for it.
Sales is saying, hey, we need this cert to get this business, right? Pay to play type thing. But the more I've learned about ISO, and I know you're very passionate about it, obviously, with your business, understatement, it really is an incredible framework, and you're going to speak to that. For security, it allows you to bring your own controls, and there's some really management as part of the process. So that's what we're going to get into. So let's start there. Why, you know, when we say ISO can be viewed as a catalyst versus just a checkbox, you know, for a security program or for a privacy program or for an AI governance program?
Yeah, I think let's break down that title a little bit more too. Like, you think about catalyst, like really what I was kind of seeking out here with this episode too is talking about, you don't have to certify necessarily to an ISO standard in order for you to benefit from an ISO standard. If you're unfamiliar with ISO standards, there's way more than just ISO 27001 that we're talking about. There's over 25,000 now. Yeah. And they cover every part of our life, including this coffee that was not meant to be kind of a prop in this episode, but here it is. But like when we think about like, you know, how to roast coffee, you think about a cacao bean and like when it's considered ripe for harvesting. All that is based on some sort of calibration or standardization somewhere, and that's found in an ISO standard. And why I think it has such great adoption and enforcement in some cases across the world too is ISO has always been set up as kind of this neutral body for standards, and it creates this kind of alignment worldwide regardless of geography, nationality, country pride, anything like that. It's just like viewed as like kind of a trade mechanism.
Well, it's out of Switzerland, right?
It is out of Switzerland. So it's the most neutral country in the world, right? It originated in the UK though, so we got to be careful there. But going back to kind of your original question too, when you build a program based on 27001, for example, it's called an information security management system. When you build 9001, you mentioned that earlier, quality management system. 42001 is an artificial intelligence management system. We have to get down to what is a management system. And that's a fancy term for a governance program. Mm-hmm. It's basically some way we manage, I'll say, the risk. We manage the uncertainty. We manage the evolution, the emerging parts of our business, et cetera. All that plays into how you would build such a management system based on this kind of risk taxonomy that might be information security, might be AI, might be quality. It could be a bunch of other different taxonomies as well. So getting back to kind of the root of your question here, and I've explained the title of the episode, when I think about kind of like how it can be a catalyst for business, I use kind of my, I'll say, response here on how I built Mastermind too. Like we built it thinking about like how can it be set up for basically a stable foundation at the start, but then continuously improving as well as it grows and it has more interested parties or even just more business revenue and business volume. And I have a couple of examples that are in my head. Maybe we'll talk about a little bit later too of some of our end customers that have actually built management systems kind of in a similar business focus versus thinking about just like how do I secure our cybersecurity. And all in all, I basically what I'd want to like, I'll say, evangelize the most here is these standards are meant to fit every type of organization from Mastermind on day one as a startup to whether you're an enterprise and you're Amazon Web Services and Google Cloud that is implementing ISO 27001. Basically, the standard is really one size fits all. It's just how do you interpret the requirements based on your risk landscape.
Right. Yep.
That's what I like about the flexibility.
Threats to your organization and what's the risk treatment around it. Does that qualify? You know.
Totally. And I'll say if I was to give a contrast real quick to other popular schemes out there that we all work with and encounter on a daily basis, especially in the U.S. market, PCI DSS, HITRUST with its CSF, the FedRAMP, CMMC, a lot of buzz around those items lately and during the current administration as well. All those are basically frameworks that have controls addressing risk. Mm-hmm. When you look at a management system standard like these ISO standards, they are governance first based on your scope. A risk assessment based on your threats and vulnerabilities unique to your business sector, your current customers, your current objectives as well. And then you implement those controls. Because of those kind of first two steps I just articulated as part of the governance program, your controls will look very different from organization to organization. Even if you're 50 people and you look at the next 50-person company, no two are the same. So from a career perspective, I really like ISO standards because everyone of my clients looks a little bit different. From a, I'll say, implementation perspective, if you're a company implementing an ISO standard, it's going to be very much tailor-made.
Yeah. Yeah. What about, now you just got the wheels turning a little bit. All those ones you mentioned, totally agree. Prescriptive controls, already built in, recommended for how you implement them. What about SOC 2?
Yeah.
Would that maybe be the most similar here? When I know what this is about ISO, but in terms of...
Like more risk-based, though, to your point?
And how you're applying it. Now, there's controls that you're going to...
Criteria in SOC 2.
Criteria
that
you're going
to build controls for.
Borrow from. And ISO has that a little bit, too, right, with some recommended controls.
Yeah, so I would say we can create some parallels there. So in SOC 2, they have the trust services criteria. So security, availability, confidentiality, processing integrity, and privacy criteria. So you can kind of build these into what is your SOC 2 examination, I can't speak. The security TSC, trust service criteria, is always required in order for you to go through a SOC 2 Type 1 or SOC 2 Type 2.
Right.
With that being said,
the common criteria.
The common criteria.
They call it.
Yes. SOC 2, you look at that criteria, and then based on your organization, you will build controls around that criteria. It's similar to thinking in terms of risk-based approach. Whereas with ISO, you have control descriptions, or depending on the standard, it could be a control objective, and you build basically or implement those controls to meet those objectives or descriptions. Now, I'll say the difference here. While SOC 2 has criteria and you build controls, that criteria is typically a little bit more rigid, a little bit more prescriptive than what you're going to find in ISO. So if I use ISO 27001 as an example in one of its 93 NXA controls, both ISO 27001 and SOC 2 have a control around secure authentication or passwords, okay? If you go look at SOC 2 and its criteria, it's going to prescribe certain strength of passwords. That might be character length limits. That might be rotation requirements. Can't use any of the passwords you use in the last three tries of that user credential, right, or that kind of thing. Whereas with ISO, it just says strong quality password. You decide what is strong, what is quality, and it's meant to be more, I'll say, purpose-built based on what is the system or environment is trying to protect. Mm-hmm. So maybe a password for a like R&D type environment that has no production data, no customer information, no PII of any sort in there, maybe that has less strength of a password credential required on it than one that is covering customer prod. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's how you're designed to like think about these controls, unique based on environment, based on risk when you are applying ISO.
And that, I think that speaks back to the title too. And I know you talked about the term catalyst, not a checkbox, but you know, ISO is an opportunity if it is something that you need to go through certification for some third party or a client to demonstrate good data stewardship. You still have the opportunity to design those controls based on your business, how impactful you want it to be, you know, and how you want to manage it moving forward and how it wants to grow, right? You don't have to operate on the exact same playbook as every single other company, and that could be advantageous.
What I like to always kind of like tell people when they are trying to basically uncover the bare minimum, I'm not saying you're trying to do that, but sometimes it leads to that type of conversation. Technically speaking, you could have a four-character password protect a system, and depending on your perspective, POV on ISO 27001, that could be conforming, that could meet that control.
Sure.
So yes, there. Now, taking a step back, like, you know, what is, you know, minimum benchmark practice? Now you're talking about best practice at all. Like, yeah, you need better than a four-character password. That's essentially a PIN, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's only so many permutations of the four numbers or four letters that could exist, and you could easily crack that password.
Yeah.
With that being said, I will say there is definitely kind of two sides to the market here. You have the market where it's like, I have my salesperson. Every time I think about sales, I just point to you.
Oh, there you go.
VP growth, not sales. Different. But every time I think about like a customer going the first time through ISO 27001, since we're on that topic, typically it's coming from kind of a buy side thought process where it's like, hey, we want to make it easier to purchase from us. Our sales team might be saying like, hey, we have a prospect ready to sign on the dotted line. It's worth six figures in annual value to us in terms of revenue. We just have to have this one thing. How do we go get this one thing?
Mm-hmm.
And because of that urgency and that $100,000 project sitting out there in the ether, they say, what do I have to do, bare minimum, to get that thing so we can move forward?
Very common.
Okay? If you approach it more proactively, where you're not in that type of time-bound urgency situation, you can do way more things with the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from my perspective as an auditor certification body, we want to see customers really adopt the standard. That doesn't mean go get certified. That means actually implement it how it was meant to be implemented.
Yeah.
That means not just a super narrow scope. That means applying it to the organization and applying it to the organization based on its current practices. So one of the examples I like to use is...
Well, I was about to say, before you go into that, because that's a good segue to the next question, and I think you were almost about to answer before I even asked it.
Mm-hmm.
What are some examples, right, of organizations where you've seen their security, their privacy posture improve because of implementation of ISO standards? I would say conceptually, but then also I think you were about to talk about real world examples.
Yeah, and I can touch on a few of these. They're public information, and some of them are actually even open source. One of the examples I like, I was actually talked about them on LinkedIn earlier this week, and depending on when this gets released, so maybe earlier this month, but a company called Dedupli. Dedupli is a CRM tool, if you want to think of it that way. And as it sounds, like, they deduplify or deduplicate, whatever the right word is, any sort of like Salesforce or HubSpot type entry at an account level or a contact level, opportunity level, when you might be merging databases.
You have Salesforce familiarity.
Oh, of course, yeah. you can't be in this industry and not know sales and Salesforce or any sort of CRM. But it helps you basically keep integrity of your data, keep it clean, good hygiene. And if you have a sales team, I know you don't have a sales team, you have a growth team, but for your growth team, if they are, you know, having async access into a CRM, they need to deduplicate like whatever parts of an account or an account merges with another account, that kind of thing. It allows for you to do that more efficiently with like fuzzy matches, and then you can see it all in one pane. Very cool company, but they're less than 15 people or fewer than 15 people. They adopted ISO 27001 and actually 27017 and 27018 as well.
Okay.
So cloud security and cloud privacy extensions.
Mm-hmm.
As of last year, 2024, they were an early customer mastermind as well. And they basically used ISO 27001 specifically around like their management review process that's prescribed in 27001 and clause 9.3 to basically build out like, what is top management going to review when we periodically meet? So almost like a version of a steering committee.
Really?
Okay. And I think it's really interesting when companies do that very early because they didn't have a meeting mechanism like this previously. They started looking at 27001. They were seeing it come out as nice-to-haves.
Why did they start looking at it in the first place?
Initially, it was sales-driven.
Okay.
It was nice-to-haves. There was nothing that was like saying, hey, like sign on the dotted line like once you have this. But it was a little bit more proactive because they're hearing noise about it in the space through some of their deals.
Okay.
They went ahead and started implementing it and said, all right, like we do a lot of these control stuff already. Like
right.
We built like, you know, a secure platform. But from a governance standpoint, they had not done much of it yet. To be frank, they were probably a little bit early of doing any of that governance stuff because of the size of the company at that
right.
point. But they used it as an opportunity, especially on that management review, to start having periodic steering committee meetings where top management, like the CTO and CEO, like original founders, were meeting with the rest of the org, and they had a specific agenda that was based on the management review inputs found in 27001. It served kind of as a guideline for how they were going to run those steering committees on a go-forward basis. So now year two comes around. This was earlier this summer here in 2025. Come back in, doing the surveillance audit now mm-hmm. for deduplicate, and I'm seeing kind of the evolution of how the steering committee has worked now over a full 12-month term at this point. And every quarter, like these topics have now expanded from what was the original, say, 5 or 7 inputs required by the standard have now all blown up into each an individual like section of the slide deck where everyone's reporting out KPIs based on like how the business is doing.
Hmm.
And so not every company is going to get the opportunity to like literally charter their steering committee of top management using 27001 at the time 27001 is needed. But it shows how 27001 can like morph into these regular business functions, whether it be just a KPI review, it be a meeting of the minds at top management, like executive level, or it's possibly used as an intake mechanism for they say, hey, we have this business opportunity. Maybe we expand product catalog or
That's
service catalog. Like, how does security play into that?
Yeah. Because ISO 27001, you talked about earlier, so that's certification of an information security management system,
yep.
ISMS. To me, what I just heard there is they're really focusing on the mechanism of the management system
yeah.
and how it allows them to manage for information security. So, and maybe you can't speak to this.
Sure.
You know, it's confidential. But so what I just gathered from that is they use it for that, but then they started to use that mechanism for other KPIs and things. See, they like yep. the structure and the model and the consistency of it.
I mean, not to make fun of you, they use it for growth. they do. I mean, it's for business enablement. It's understanding like, hey, we have an opportunity to – you know, service a new CRM platform. It's not Salesforce or HubSpot, for example. And like, you know, does that make sense for us as well? So they're viewing it not just in a security lens. It's blown into like just total
yeah.
business growth mm-hmm. and, you know, how we think about the vision for the company as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a good one.
I'll give a second example too here briefly.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Thanks. another public client, a mastermind as well, and they're a really cool company, is called Sourcegraph. Sourcegraph is very unique in the fact that they open source all of their security documentation. So it's all hosted on a Notion page, Notion dashboard. And you can – I don't have the hyperlink off the top of my mind right now. I'll put it in the comments of this. But you can go review all of Sourcegraph's policies, They are all online for anybody with the hyperlink to go access. And it's a different kind of level of transparency, if you want to think of it that way. So, you know, we have trust centers out there. You can go review our security documentation and compliance.
You're a big fan, according to your LinkedIn.
Love the trust centers. Yeah, I mean, why are we hiding it?
Remember, I have you bugged.
So thank you.
I know what you said yesterday.
Very true. But, you know, if you want to dig a little bit deeper than a traditional trust center, like, let's actually go read that incident response policy. Let's see, like, what mechanisms they put in place and how they respond should there be a breach of their end customer data if I'm going to be a customer of them as well. I think that's, I'll say extreme, but I don't mean that in a negative connotation. I think it's more of, like, you just don't see it yet in our industry. And I say yet because, you know, we talk about trust centers. I think there's a growing economy of trust centers as a service. Like, there's one side of the house that will say trust centers are just going to become like this, you know, no-fee feature on top of all these popular GRC platforms. And to an extent, we've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's trust centers 1.0. I think there's a trust centers 2.0 emerging here in the next 3 to 5 years where it'll allow for a user like me and you doing due diligence on a service provider to double-click into some of these areas. They say, hey, we have multi-factor authentication across all our systems. And we're like, okay, prove it. Click on it. Oh, I can see they're using Okta. Great. Click on Okta. I can see currently it is monitoring these assets within their infrastructure.
Wow.
Okay, and it is green light right now. And then I can also verify that red light, green light is not being manipulated by the company as well who's hosting that trust center.
Wow.
Unfortunately, right now, I have yet to see a red light on a trust center ever. Meaning there's probably some levels of stage gating prior to a red light hitting a trust center. Yeah.
Okay. Those are great examples. Not just for, I think, information security, but just the management system, right? The
it's topic openness, it's transparency. And frankly speaking, if you have a management system that is built into, I'll say, the fibers of the business, how it operates, then you have nothing to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Like it... I think we got to get away, and it's tough. I understand different pressures here. I think we have to get away from these companies constantly seeking out what we say is like clean or no findings audit reports. It is okay to have exceptions, issues, nonconformities. That is healthy in a way. And I'll tell you from an auditor perspective, it's healthy when I see it in an audit report because it tells me that, hey, we actually had an auditor that was actually hunting for something, and doing their job.
I don't remember the name of the movie, but I saw a movie a long time ago, and this is probably a terrible analogy, but I think maybe it was called Cheaters or something like that, but it was these high schoolers. And it's probably a terrible movie. It's probably been over 20 years.
You're on a roll here.
It was basically a cheating scheme that they put together, and one of them got busted, and I remember him saying to the other one, you never get 100. Never get a perfect score.
Yeah, that's good. Was the movie called The Perfect Score?
It might have been called Cheaters. I don't know.
Cheaters? I remember SAT like cheating or something.
It was back when the TV guide was, channel 20, and you had to sit and watch to see what everything was. So you just didn't bother.
That must have been a decade before I was born. I can't remember that.
You don't remember TV guide?
That's good. That's good. But, I mean, it's really true. Like, it almost like doesn't pass the eye test if you see these like clean audit reports time and time again. And
I've had clients, information, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
Say, they use a low budget auditor. And they've said, oh, no, we had a clean report. I don't know how, but it's what the report says.
Well, it's also very telling, too, when like a new GRC like director comes in, takes over a program, and they're not familiar with the auditor, and they start scrutinizing the external audit reports they've been getting, year after year for that organization. And they say, look, I peeked under the hood for 30 minutes, and I don't understand how we keep getting passes on X, Y, and Z. So, a whole other topic around low budget firms and low budget quality, and you get what
another
you pay
day.
For.
But, another day, another podcast. Yeah.
Maybe.
Another trip
topic.
Up here.
I hate that topic, but maybe.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, let's switch gears here then as we get into, I'd say, the back half or the final few questions of this podcast, this episode. Where's 27701 stand?
Oh, you love 27701. Yeah.
Well, I like privacy. I like data privacy. We do a lot of data privacy work. And that's a passion of mine. It's funny. You're going to have thoughts on this, but I find, in my conversations that it seems like the 27701 certification privacy information management system, that the auditors and those helping even implement that system are not super familiar with privacy law.
No, it's very, very
which
accurate.
Is what it was built for, right?
It was.
And so we have a whole privacy group, and it's always, well, why don't they do 27701? It's like, well, it's more of an audit function. They're not auditors. They're more advisors. But I'm getting off topic. Where's the updates stand? And then maybe you can address that question, too.
Yeah, happy to. I'll say your question around, like, competency, essentially, extends to AI and 42001 as well. Same issue.
Okay.
So to answer
that on the next episode.
We can talk about that whenever you want, Jordan. Okay. with that being said, ISO 27001 versus ISO 27701, for people who may not be familiar, it's one digit different. One's an extra seven in there. for 27701, it is building a privacy information management system. Currently, the revision is 2019, so it was published in August of 2019. Mm-hmm. ISO 27701 has a co-requisite requirement, almost a prereq, where it has to be supported by an underlying ISO 27001 information security management system. So basically, the adage of you can't have privacy without security holds true currently. with ISO 27701, it is under major revision right now by JTC1, which is the Joint Technical Committee that authors that standard. And as of the first week of July, it went into kind of the final stage of publication for that new major revision.
Okay.
It goes to a seven-week ballot now. So we should be expecting, if it meets that timeline, sometime here in August. However, just looking at a few other standards that just got recently published, like 42006, they can break that 7 weeks if they need to. So I would probably say more conservatively, it's going to come out next month in September. And when it comes out, we already have seen the what's called the final draft international standard, the FDIS. We know that it is decoupling that co-requisite relationship.
Right.
So you could have standalone ISO 27701 certification without the security component here in the future as well. Answer your question here a little bit on the competency question, if I was to rephrase that a little bit. You're just saying people.
Well, I guess it's part of the theme again of this podcast.
Yeah. Right?
Using it as a catalyst, using it to improve processes, not just a checkbox. I would challenge that on 27701 if the organizations helping you prepare for that and get audited against it are not well versed in data privacy. Are you really building an effective data privacy management program?
Yeah, so I'll speak to it a little bit more objectively at first, and I'll give you a little bit more of an opinion here. So 27701, it has two annexes full of controls.
Mm-hmm.
Annex A is found for the PII controller, and that has 31 controls. Annex B is a PII processor, and that has 18 controls.
And this is current 2019?
The current 2019 major revision that's currently in force right now. First thing I'll say is all ISO certifications can be scoped as narrowly or as broadly as the organization wants. Ultimately, as the certification body, the auditor, we audit to the scope that the organization dictates.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you run into a situation like this, and this is the same thing with like the GDPR, every attorney everywhere always wants to limit liability.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will tell you, of the 27701 certifications I've been involved in, a current company, prior company, very few adopt the PII controller, the 31 of the total 49 controls in the entire standard. Most of them say, we're a processor. Most say, we're a processor. And even at that, we're a limited processor.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any responsibility. It's all our end customers.
Or at least that's what they want their cert to say.
That's what they want their certification to say, and they can dictate that scope.
Mm.
We're running into something similar to 42001, which I can articulate here in a future episode. But with 27701, don't always point fingers back to the auditor for like lack
fair,
of substance.
Fair,
the organization is dictating
you're
that.
You're given an audit package to audit.
Of course. Now, from a competency standpoint, is conformity assessments and ISO certifications the same as compliance to law and regulation? You know, the answer to that is no.
Mm-hmm.
So when 27701 first came out, it had a lot of fanfare. There was some authors on
It came out the year after GDPR was
went into force. Yeah. So GDPR went into force May 2018, August 2019, you have 27701. Yeah, it's starting to feel like, hey, maybe this is what we call the certification mechanism for the EU GDPR. If you read Article 42, 43, it talks about, hey, there is a way to certify to the GDPR.
You're quoting one of the 99 GDPR articles now?
Is there 99 total? Yeah.
There was.
I want to make sure I'm clear on that.
Maybe they've added more.
I know 42 and 43 really well. Look at you. I have to because I'm competent in ISO 27701.
And you say masterminds about making your clients masterminds.
Yeah, well, we're educating right now. I just want to make sure I'm clear on the total number of articles there. I think there's some that are like kind of prefaces to that. Anyways,
well, I heard a great talk at a privacy conference one time, and the topic was, I got 99 articles, but you know,
and that
something's
with you.
Not
that was
one,
good.
Right?
That was good.
It stuck
good.
With me, right? It where wasn't I'll, the JC lyric.
Yeah, there you go. where I'll go with that, though, is GDPR certification eventually did get approved by the European Data Protection Board. And there are GDPR certification mechanisms out today that are not ISO 27701. ISO 27701 never became that GDPR certification mechanism.
Right.
However, people were thinking originally when it came out, it might be it because none had been approved yet. And the CNIL, which is the Data Protection Authority out of France, was actually part of the authorship or group of that joint technical committee that authored 27701. So everyone's like, okay, like we have DPA involvement here that are actually authoring the standard. And then if you looked at the standard when it came out, there was an informative reference in one of the annexes that actually mapped it to the European Union GDPR. So you're saying all signs are pointing to that this could possibly be a certification mechanism. Unfortunately, it never became that certification mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the GDPR, one of the articles, I think it's 43 for this one, it talks about another ISO standard, 17065. And that is a product and services certification, not a management system certification, which would be under 17021. And so technically, 27701 could have never been it. It would have had been extended, augmented some way to apply to a specific product or service.
Mm.
Getting back to the competency piece here, and I'll wrap up. But ultimately speaking, these auditors are not supposed to be super well-versed in law. One, law changes more frequently than even these ISO standards that serve as references and normative criteria. But second, when we have this intake process of certification by that I'm intimately familiar with, customers have to apply for certification. We'll think of that more like a scoping call almost, like with an early prospect. But if we get a customer that works in a specific sector, say something illicit, for example, maybe like something adult, we can reject that applicant or that prospect on the basis that we don't have sector-specific knowledge to apply that criteria to it. I'm using an extreme example here.
Okay.
But if for some reason there's some sort of sensitive data there, like we're supposed to reject it based on our sector-specific competency.
If you feel like, okay, you're beyond your skis on it.
Well, actually, for Mastermind, we're actually very specific. We can only work with, and you might think this is broad, but these are a little bit more contained than anything, but technology companies, financial services, and healthcare. Now, you can apply that first one.
Is that
one,
per your
under our accreditation scope?
Your accreditation? Yeah. Okay.
You don't find that on the certificate or the scope of accreditation. It's found in our quality system, and that's audited by that accreditation body when they're approving your accreditation. It's more pertinent in quality management, but it comes up in 27.
So what do you do when they're outside of that?
You can't support it. So like, let me give
you
something.
You introduce them elsewhere?
You reject the applicant. You say, like, hey, we can't work with you. So I'll give you an example, though. That technology pillar, that can be pretty elastic. So you can have a company that works in maybe a sector that you don't have a ton of knowledge in, but if they have an IT platform, then you can accept that applicant. So if that IT platform is what's under scope for the 27001 audit, if you want to use that as an example.
Gotcha.
It comes up more often.
I mute my phone.
Oh, you're good.
Of course. Being in the middle of our first recording podcast.
You're good.
Amateur.
Well, yeah, very much. You must have not done this before. But even more interesting is like ISO 9001 quality management. There's different like what they call EA or industry codes. And so like we would only operate if we ever did 9001 under EA code 33, which is IT. There's EA codes for like nuclear, or aerospace, or manufacturing, and basically like if you think about 9001 or like I'll say origins, this was like basically certifying like an assembly line like at a car manufacturing plant. Like David Foreman is not qualified to tell you whether or not that like car part coming off the line is conforming to 9001 and whatever other industry safety
not
standards.
Yet.
I don't think I'm going to be.
Okay. I think that's probably a wrap for today.
Excellent.
That was a lot of good stuff. Well, not for today, for this episode.
Oh, good.
Because we're going to take a quick break, and you're going to come back and
we'll talk about AI.
And 42001 and 42006, apparently.
Yeah. 42005, too, if you want to.
8, 9, 10. You know.
I don't think those exist yet.
Yeah. How do people get in touch with Mastermind?
Yeah, so you can find us online. Our website is mastermindassurance.com. You can email us at hello@mastermindassurance.com. You can find us on LinkedIn. Jordan's already alluded that we are very noisy on LinkedIn. You can follow me specifically. My handle is MastermindDavid, or you can find our company page, and you'll be linked to all the good news. Also, just continue watching this podcast because we're a frequent guest.
That's right. Yeah. And if you like what you hear on these podcasts and you're interested in contacting Compliance Point, you've probably heard it by now. But if not, compliancepoint.com. You can email us directly at connect@compliancepoint.com. I'm also active on LinkedIn and would welcome any messages there. David,
please.
We'll take a break and
thank you.
Do it again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody.